It might be worthwhile to take a quick look round with him. On climbing the ladder outside the wardroom, we reached a deckhouse, which formed the superstructure on which the superimposed aftergun was built. Hatchways led down to the cabin fleet, as well as to the wardroom, and the galley was contained in a space further aft. The cabin flat consisted of a gangway with two cabins on each side and the captain's cabin in front. The latter stretched athwartships and was divided by a curtain into a sleeping cabin and an office. A doorway in the deckhouse led almost directly onto the starboard row of mines, with very little room to squeeze by. Further forward, on the upper deck, was the hatchway leading to the double cabin. Then the empty, after torpedo race, the searchlight, the forward twin torpedo tubes, the anti-aircraft gun, the after funnel, the engine room hatch, and the foremost funnel. Ladders led on either side to the forecastle, and in the bridge superstructure on this level was the transmitting station, the wireless cabin, the sick bay, and a cabin for one of the subs. Another pair of ladders on the other side led to the signal platforms, which were extensions on either side of the wheelhouse. Abaft the latter were the chart house and captain's sea cabin. A third part of ladders connected the signal platforms with the open navigating bridge. Here, the eye level was about 40 feet above the sea, and even in rough weather, nothing more solid than spray reached this height. At the foremost end of the bridge, a raised platform extended round the compass binnacle. On the port side, there was a covered-in chart table, and in the after part, a small director tower for central control of the guns. For the rest, there were the usual sets of voice pipes and navy phones, electric indicators for conveying mine-laying instructions aft, a torpedo director, a Dummer-esque table for calculating the rate of change of range and deflection for the guns, depth charge releases, and so on. The Snotty had certainly a fine chance of airing his knowledge here, though I found little that was really new to me. It was when we returned to the mines that he had the pull over me, and I strongly disliked the way in which he emphasized the points in his story by striking the covered horns smart blows with his fist. I had not yet got accustomed to living with these party-coloured monstrosities. In actual fact, the mines were almost harmless during the period we were in harbour. They were no more dangerous than shells, and the bending of a horn did not bring about detonation for a variety of reasons. There were metallic spheres with a buoyancy of about 100 pounds and had 5 horns on the top side and 2 submarine horns beneath. They were attached to large square sinkers, which contained a drum inside, round which the mooring wire was coiled. A plummet outside the sinker was also connected to the drum by a length of chain equal to the depth at which the mine was to be moored below the surface. On sliding the mine overboard, it detached itself from the sinker, but was unable to rise to the surface on account of the drum being locked. A moment later, however, the plummet had fallen to the full length of its chain, and this unlocked the mechanism. The mines, thus released, bobbed up to the surface in the ship's wake and remained there, the mooring wire uncoiling from the drum all the while, until the plummet struck the bottom, when the brake was again applied to the drum and the mine drawn down to a depth beneath the surface equal to the length of the plummet chain. Small wheels were fitted to the sinkers, and these rested on mine rails. The line of mines was drawn aft by a hauling aft machine, which was situated close to the stern. But the individual mines were finally coaxed overboard by hands stationed outboard and inboard. A soluble plug in the detonator circuit prevented the mines becoming live until they had been immersed for about 20 minutes. This minimized the risk of an accident to any of our own ships during laying operations. On some occasions, when we were visiting a more than usually dangerous area, we used sinkers, which carried the mines to the bottom and then allowed crops to rise at intervals of, say, 1, 2, 3, and 4 weeks. Then there were the M mines, but we'd better leave these until later.